and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And WTCM News Talk 580, welcome to another edition of New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design of Traverse City, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Ron. Good morning. Good morning. In our temporary studio here.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having us. And thank you out there in listening land, listening to us. Quite a view here. It's always fun to kind of look out the window as I say that. It's, of course, Thursday,
yeah.
April 8th, right? Do I have that right?
Yes, April? It was 8th. April Fool's Day last
yes,
week.
Okay,
when
so
we
that's
were
the, that's the that's the clue, Dennis. It was April 1st last week. Now, what's interesting, I think, before we get started in the show, which we have a ton of information, frankly, as Heidi and I were talking about this, I was thinking we could do this. I don't know that our listening audience would like this, but for 2 hours, because of what we have available to us at our very fingertips. Joining us today, too, is Heidi Thompson, our managing director there at Prout Financial, and also a registered representative, and now an RICP, a retirement income certified professional.
That's it.
I got
it. Good morning.
Right. Whoa. Right off the cuff there. Anyway, yeah. Yowza. Scary out there. By the way, I got my vaccination yesterday at the Hagerty Center, sponsored by the Grand Traverse Health Department, and what a great experience that was. Those guys are really organized over there, and I was in and out in about a half an hour, including the 15-minute wait that they require after you get your vaccine.
I wondered why your hair was purple today. That
yeah, you know, out. Just, they say the side effects can be berry, and it's what's left is purple. So, you know, I don't know what happened. He's only kidding, of course. But, Ron, you and I were talking just before the show that you're hoping or thinking or heard or read that herd immunity may happen by the end of this month.
I don't know if it could officially be measured, but there was a professional, medical professional from Johns Hopkins that said when you add up all the vaccinations by the end of the month, when you add up all the people that have, was it antibodies that have already had it?
Yeah.
And you add up those who are naturally immune, we could be at that 70% marker.
Yeah. That'd be great. That'd be fun when we don't have to talk about this anymore either.
Yes.
So let's move on, shall we? So this article is from Healthy Aging, Ed Slott, the five of the biggest retirement planning changes in the last 5 years. So this is an article that Ed actually did for the magazine Healthy Aging. Five of the biggest retirement planning changes in the last 5 years. And it's incredible, the changes in the last 5 years, the conversations that we're having with our clients. It actually made me think of what's happening here in northern Michigan with the real estate situation. A couple of minor changes introduced can have a huge impact on a given market or situation. And can we name all those changes that have happened? Well, the cities have become more difficult for people to live in. We had the COVID going on. We had also technology involved where people could work much more independently and remotely. And given those combinations, and some would say a very affordable real estate market, speaking of us in northern Michigan, all of a sudden, the demand has skyrocketed for the real estate sector in the Traverse City, Petoskey, this whole region, Leadenhall. Everyone gets it. The price increases I looked at, actually went on Zillow yesterday, just kind of checking some of the local real estate, and was shocked in the last month, just looking at some nearby properties, 15% or so in the last month. Obviously, those aren't able, I don't think that those will continue, but it's amazing nonetheless to think about minor changes can have a huge impact on us, and that's some of what we'll be talking about here. Yes, Heidi.
Yeah, and if you just think in the last 5 years, we've had some legislation that has impacted income taxes, retirement rules, and estate laws. And that's some of the stuff that you're going to talk about today. So these rules that have come down in the last 5 years have changed some things dramatically. And so it doesn't hurt to go over it again because there's just so much.
Lucky for you, Ed says, I'm providing an overview of the five most significant changes under these new laws and policies that impact your retirement savings. Now, some would say these are relatively minor. Others would say this is huge. These are major. So number one is the elimination of the stretch IRA will likely upend many existing retirement strategies. And he refers to this as a devious provision inserted into the SECURE Act. It'll be a huge blow to the even best laid plans. This is going to mean that the stretch IRA, as sometimes dictated through a trust, it's going to have to, it's basically wiped out the applicability or the usability to a significant degree of a trust, using that trust as the vehicle to control that IRA after you have passed. Given that change in just the last 2 years from 1-1 of 20, it's, I don't know, it's not a full 2 year period. I get that. Okay. So, but given that change, it's dramatic, making these, you will want to review your estate plans with your estate planning attorney, especially if your trust is named as a primary or even contingent beneficiary on your IRA, on your 401k, on any other type of retirement account, 403Bs, 457 plans. All those apply. In this change in the spend down, in essence, it's requiring, after both you and a spouse pass away, that that account be emptied after 10 years. It has to be emptied after the end of the 10th year. And that doesn't matter whether it's an inherited IRA, an inherited Roth IRA, or, and they're sometimes referred to as beneficiary accounts, or an inherited 401k or 457 from a, for rather a non-spouse, someone that you're not married to, you inherit it from them. That's the best definition I can give of what these accounts mean. And we have a phone call here, apparently, Ron.
Yeah, let's go to Traverse City. Kathleen's on the line for Dennis and Heidi today. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning.
Good morning, Kathleen.
I have a question. I've been trying to help my sister with this, and when I look online, I get various answers. So this is about the capital gains deduction on a home sale.
Sure.
If the spouse dies, is there a time limit to keep the $500,000 for a couple deduction? I've seen 2 years. I've seen it has to be the same calendar year. And I've seen some crazy stuff about the stepped-up basis. So could you clear that for me?
I can attempt to answer it. I'm honestly, that's something you're going to, I don't have that rule right in front of me. So
okay.
You're going to want to consult with your favorite tax professional on that. Now, how recently did your friend's spouse pass away?
Well, he didn't, but he's home on hospice, and my concern was for her. They've lived in this house in the more expensive part of Royal Oak, which they bought 50 years ago.
Okay.
So you know that it's going to sell for a lot more than the $25,000 that they paid for it 50 years ago.
Gosh. Yeah.
And so my concern was, should she be selling it right now while he's still alive, or does she have some time frame and doing it, and that would be very disruptive to take him out of the home when he's on hospice. So,
absolutely. Yes. Totally understand that part of it. That sounds really rough. So I would say she probably has at least 2 years before she's qualified as a single individual. But in terms of when that occurs and that timing, again, she's going to want to consult with a tax professional on that, okay?
So would your accountant that does your taxes should know the answer to that?
They should, and be able to state chapter and verse. And do we have anything at the I'm sure we have at the office, Heidi, that rule through Ed Slott and Company.
Yeah, I'm sure we could find out the information if you want to call our office.
I'm thinking of the page. Okay. Frankly, it's you know how that appears illustrated in your own mind, but I don't remember what it says about that. But if you call our office, I'm almost certain that we can get that piece to you.
The next time we have John Sluice in, we'll make sure we ask him that question so that he can give us the answer.
That's a darn good
one.
Thank
you very much.
You bet.
Thank
important.
You very much.
You're welcome. Okay.
What's your 947?
Sorry, Ron. Our phone number is 231-947-3992. I know we can get that information in regards to how long does that benefit last for a formerly married individual in not having to pay the gain up to $500,000 for a couple. And that is, frankly, every 2 years that's available to someone on an appreciated asset, and it's a house. All right, so number two, how are we doing on time here, Ron? I don't see a...
We're good.
Okay, we're good so far. Yeah, we don't have a... Oh, there we go. No, we're good. For one more point, and then we'll hit a break. Number two, Roth conversions were made permanent, meaning there are no do-overs. So if you decide to do a Roth conversion, that means that once you do or complete that Roth conversion, that means you're taking money out of an IRA and converting it to a Roth. You have to pay the tax on it, but you can't change your mind. Previous law said that with as long as you were within that tax year, you could change your mind, put it back into the IRA and say, no harm, no foul. I didn't really mean to do that. Now, if you do the conversion, it's permanent. So you have to make certain that you do your homework. You have to be more careful when converting. You need to have a good projection of the tax you'll owe in the conversion and make sure you'll have the funds to pay those taxes that are due. Heidi, you've got a comment to make on that.
Yeah, this was just one of the things that we were sad to see go away because, like Dennis said earlier, that you could change your mind in the past. So say you did a Roth conversion at the beginning of the year and the market was high. Well, if the market declined over the year and in November it was much lower, you'd be like, wow, you know, I paid tax on that higher amount to get those amount of shares moved from my IRA to my Roth. So you could undo it and then you could do another Roth conversion when the market was lower. And that went away. So that was sort of a sad one to see go by the wayside. It took away a strategy that we used to use.
It did. Now, what's interesting is that many believe that they can't do a Roth conversion. Well, my income's too high. I'm too old. I'm too young. Whatever. There is no limitation, income, age, or otherwise, to doing a Roth conversion. Why could that make sense? It may not just be about you. It may be about the spouse. Is he or she have an even longer life expectancy than yourself? What about the children? Could they use tax-free income? Do I really care, dear, whether or not they want tax-free income? You know, I've heard that conversation before. So obviously, there are a lot of different reasons you may want to consider it, but they may be specific to you enough, and there may be enough benefit where you say, oh, my gosh, I don't want to have to make required minimum distributions for this from this thing for the rest of my life. I want to get parts of it or all of it converted to the Roth so I don't have to take just the required minimum distributions. And or if I do decide to take a distribution from this, I want it to be tax-free forever. Okay? All right, so I actually got a text from John Sluice about this previous question that was asked in regards to a highly appreciated home and the spouse passes away. So, John, here, I'm going to read this verbatim so you got it. The answer to the question, number one, talk to your tax advisor. Thanks, John. Exactly what I said. Number two, if the principal residence is sold within 2 years, the principal residence is sold within 2 years of the spouse's death, it qualifies for the exemption. 2 years. If longer, number three, if longer than 2 years, don't forget about the setup that would be considered for the deceased half, but that depends on state of residence and how title is held. So if it gets more complicated, more than 2 years, then you want to check that out. Certainly check with your tax advisor, but that's great confirmation. It is a 2-year time frame that he or she, given a spouse passes away, can avoid that gain on the sale of the home, as long as it's done within 2 years of the previous spouse's death.
So thanks, John, for getting back to us so quickly so we could answer that question.
Number three, naming trusts as IRA beneficiaries may no longer work. Now, I've already referenced this, but he says most estate plans will need to be updated or overhauled. In short, the IRA estate plan needs to be revised by leaving less of your IRA, hopefully, to these trusts and exchanging them for a tax-free vehicle, if possible. I'm adding softeners, if you will, to this language, using, number one, Roth conversions, two, life insurance, or even three, charitable trust for those who are charitably inclined. So all of a sudden, pivoting in terms of how we're going to spend this money. I just talked to an individual a couple of days ago. He received an inherited Roth IRA and was talking about drawing some money out immediately for his own expenses. And we got talking more about his current cash situation, and I said, listen, in terms of this account, if you can leave it in your longer, it's growing on a tax-free basis. Leave that asset, consider that a later asset to spend. Spend some of your cash instead if you need, you know, whatever it is you need or you want to spend your money on. $10,000 or $20,000 may be much better coming out of a savings account than a Roth IRA, even though that inherited Roth is tax-free. So consider not only the tax of it coming out, but the tax benefits of it growing, too, versus another asset that you might have. Take a look at the full picture when you're making these decisions financially. You can really help yourself. It's amazing how much you can leverage what you have. That's why we continue to talk about this. It's incredible what you can do with what you've got, if I may preach. Great quote from Hemingway. We've said it before. Now is no time to think of what you haven't done. And we all need to hear that. I do. We all have those things where we say, you know, if only I would have done that differently. If only. We've had so many people that attend these classes. You know, I wish I would have attended this class when I was 28. We all have those, you know. So if you can move from that, think about what you can do with what there is. That's key. All right. Number four, gifting strategies, and that's to charity, may need to look different now that more people are taking the standard deduction. Now, Heidi is going to be talking about an article from Hillsdale. And as we were talking about this article from Hillsdale, in terms of perhaps for some would be some more advanced gifting strategies, this is an article that we intend to talk more in depth to later. Our intent is to have a whole hour show on this. It's really that good. So naturally, as a part of this, as we're getting more complexity introduced by our legislators in Washington, D.C., we're going to need to pivot more in terms of tax advantage plans, thinking of giving to charity, thinking of giving to different loved ones, perhaps. Perhaps it's more to the grandchildren as a part of this, or others that might want to help with certain assets, and then moving how those beneficiaries are receiving those assets because of their particular tax situation, keeping that in mind. Because if you're somewhat thoughtful about this, it's amazing how you can leverage those current assets to your loved ones and to the ones that you want to give charitably. Huge how you can leverage this. So to charity, basically, one solution is the qualified charitable distribution. The only situation where 70.5 still matters is the QCD. Or qualified charitable distribution. You can't do this from a 401k, but you can from an IRA. You can give any amount up to $100,000 per per individual to the charity of your choice each year. Given that your RMD, required minimum distribution, doesn't have to start until the year you're 72, here's where you can start at 70 and a half, thoughtfully giving some of this money, if you like, to your church, to the charity of your choice, Father Fred, whatever that might be within this community, as long as it's a 501c3 organization and you follow some other rules and regs in regards to this, you can give that money tax-free to that organization. And because, why? Because the standard deduction is so high for us, most of us can no longer deduct those gifts to the charity of our choice. So consider using that IRA instead, giving that money, it's kind of a circuitous route, if you will, to the charity of your choice.
So it's sort of like a win-win. It's a win for the IRA owner, because they don't have to claim the amount given as income for income taxes. And the charity wins because instead of getting a net amount, like you getting the money and then paying income tax and they getting that net distribution, they get the full distribution. So it's one of those rare cases where you can say it's a win-win.
It is a win-win because nobody's paid any tax on that. You didn't pay tax? The charity didn't pay tax? It's another reason you may want to consider naming a charity as a partial beneficiary of your IRA. Well, what if I want my wife to get it? She can be named 100% beneficiary, but then theoretically, let's say that charity is named a 10% contingent beneficiary on the IRA. She could say, well, I want to disclaim that 10% and see that go to the charity myself because my husband just died. And I really did love him. Okay. Isn't that fun? So, and have we ever done disclaimers? We've seen clients do disclaimers for meaningful amounts when they were trying to get estate planning done that they knew that their loved ones wanted to see completed, but in their lifetime they'd not been able to do it. And I can't mention this situation too closely because we don't want to, obviously, on the radio. But it was amazing in this particular situation how they were able to accomplish what hadn't been accomplished during lifetime. We'll just leave it at that. It's incredible through the qualified disclaimer what that can do for you and for your loved ones. Yes, Heidi.
Well, I would just add, so for those of you who do have your trust as the beneficiary, I would add a contingent. Add a contingent and individual, because at least then you give the trust a strategy tool. If taxes change, tax laws change, it just gives you that extra layer of strategy. So it's fine leaving it to the trust, but I would still add that contingent just in case, because we have actually seen it make a difference to our clients. And so just a thing to keep in the back of your mind.
In this case, the contingent beneficiary can have the trust disclaim a part of that money, and they receive it to help cover expenses for whatever reason. So the qualified disclaimer can be very powerful if you've named primary and contingent beneficiaries on those retirement accounts. And I'm going to skip number 5. That's about the backdoor Roth. We've talked enough about that. I want to move on, Heidi, but do we need to take a break here, Ron, first?
Okay,
let's keep going. So Heidi got an article from Hillsdale in regards to charitable giving, and I want to give some meaningful time to that. So let's move into this right away, if you would, Heidi.
Okay, well, this is an article I saw in the most recent magazine that I got from Hillsdale, and I thought it was very interesting because they do a good job at informing people on how to give to the organization, and they have some interesting observations on estate rules and how to plan for the future.
What is the name of this magazine, Heidi?
The name of the magazine is The Update.
The Update from Hillsdale College, obviously a great institution here, right here in Michigan. And Ron has had some affiliation with them, too, in the past. So, yeah.
So this is the spring 2021 issue. And this article goes towards those people who have significant balances in their IRAs or their 401ks, they have significant assets that will probably pass on to the next generation. So let's keep that in mind as we're listening to some of this stuff. One of the biggest challenges for passing wealth on to the next generation is taxes, and we need to keep those in mind. Unlike other assets such as stock or real estate, an IRA or other retirement plans are intended to grow tax-deferred over time with no step-up in basis. Step-up in basis meaning increase in the cost basis of the asset.
Which can also mean significant tax savings. So where step-up in basis doesn't happen, you know it's a major ouch, because whoever inherits that asset inherits it at your basis. Which means all the tax that will be due when they take any income from it or any asset or get any proceeds from that asset. Okay.
Right. So because the tax has to be paid at some point in the future when you have an IRA or a plan assets. So their first option they talk about is the stretch IRA. And Dennis talked about this earlier in the show a little bit. So what they're saying in this article is consider who you're giving what assets. So if you have IRA assets, maybe that should go to the charity, and maybe some non-qualified or other investment accounts that don't have retirement restrictions on them, that might be more appropriate to give to an individual. So it's really looking at who is eligible for a stretch IRA and who isn't. Now, under the new Secure Act rules, there are certain people, like Dennis mentioned, the spouse can stretch an IRA, but it took away a lot of options for people who aren't spouses or another person that can stretch the IRA is someone who is within 10 years in age of the original IRA owner.
But okay, in that situation, that's called an eligible designated beneficiary.
Correct.
So in some cases, you know, if you have a sibling who's closer than 10 years to you in age, he or she may make sense to be a partial beneficiary of that IRA if you want them to receive some assets as well.
Right. So you just want to think about which assets are going to which people. And so that would be a good thing to talk to your financial advisor about, to make sure that you have that lined up the way that you want it.
And make sure, obviously, your financial advisor, you want to make sure that they're up on this sort of thing. So ask them specifically about strategies that they would employ for you or in your name or in your interest to satisfy these kinds of plans.
So option two is a charitable remainder trust or a charitable gift annuity. This is where you take your assets and you put it in a vehicle for the charity, but the beneficiary can have an income coming from those assets. And then when the beneficiary passes away, the assets move to the charity. This helps reduce that tax liability out there. And it offers a lifetime of income without that full tax benefit.
Are some limitations to these. These are very sophisticated strategies that you want to make certain to know the positives and the negatives of these. Whether it's a charitable lead trust, a charitable remainder trust, these types of assets can come back to the estate, or they're going out of the estate in return for you getting an income for a period of time. And many times that income can be significantly tax advantaged. If you're already charitably minded, these can be significant vehicles to give yourself and or your spouse guaranteed income. At the same time, get a significant deduction even today on an appreciated asset that you would place into that trust. Now tell me again, why would I want to do that? In case you want income. Let's say you've got a piece of real estate that's producing zero in terms of income, but yet you've got a significant capital gain on it, and you don't really want to have to pay the capital gains tax. Possibly, a charitable trust of some type may make sense for an asset like that, because once that asset is placed properly in that charitable trust, you can liquidate that asset and not pay any tax, and then take the income out of the charitable trust. Well, now that's an interesting take. Could be helpful.
And it could be a way to avoid that 10-year rule, because if you're setting it up for
the 10-year rule regarding the IRA.
Correct.
Yes.
Because it could go longer. It could provide income for a longer period.
Sure.
Yep. Okay. So then we look at option three that they talk about, and that is converting your IRA into life insurance. So what they're talking about here is consider taking out money from your IRA. You would have to pay the tax, but then use that money to pay premiums on a life insurance policy. So why would that be a good idea, Dennis?
Well, that doesn't sound like a lot of fun. So I'm taking money out of my IRA and I'm going to pay premiums for life insurance? I'm too old for life insurance. I've heard that before. So why would someone want to do that? Well, if they really don't, number one, have a significant need for that money from their IRA and they want to convert, in essence, that IRA from being fully taxable to fully non-taxable to their beneficiaries and leveraging that amount into the future. So for those of you who have an interest in possibly increasing your estate in a tax-free manner, that's one of the few games left to do that because money coming out of a life insurance policy is non-taxable as a death benefit as long as you're within the estate planning limits or estate tax limits, rather.
Right. And they had an interesting observation here. They say a life insurance policy allows you to avoid stock market risk over time and can also provide liquidity if necessary.
Well, everyone knows there's no risk in the stock market anymore. It's only going straight up. So, right? Yeah. Dennis, we'll see about that, shall we? Yeah. All right. So go ahead, Heidi.
Okay. So, well, that's most of the article. It just, IRA assets are used to support the people and institutions that have been important to you in your lifetime. So by doing this planning, you can pass on a benefit to the people that you want and the institutions you want that you support. And by taking some time now, you'll be able to realize those goals.
It's an awesome thing to be able to think about because many of us are having to shift given the threat of rising in taxes and the reality of rising taxes that we're seeing already through the Secure Act that was just incepted at the end of 2019. Given that reality, what are the options that you have? What are the opportunities that you have? Again, given proper advice from your financial advisors as well as your attorneys and sometimes accountants, you can do a lot more, perhaps, than what you previously thought possible. Heidi's got the Shea Stats today for us.
So these are Shea Stats by Heidi. Okay, in the last 30 years, the best 12-month performance for the S&P 500 occurred over the one-year period that ended last Wednesday, March 31st of 2021. The S&P 500 gained 56.4% total return from March 31st of 20 to March 31st of 21. I just think it's interesting that they didn't mention that we also had that big downturn right before March 31st. So.
Yeah. The other side of that was we had a 35% decline in about 6 weeks. Yeah.
So last year, anyway, I just thought that was left out. But that was from BTN Research.
It was so long ago. It was, I mean, that's more than a year. In news time, that's like an eternity, right?
So April has been the number one best month for the S&P 500 index over the last 30 years. So that's from 1991 to 2020, gaining an average of 2.17% total return. Now, I have a question for Dennis and Ron. What is the second best month?
Second best month's return?
Mm-hmm.
March of 2021.
No, just average. Average for a month. What? April's the best over the last 30 years on average.
What is that average again?
2.17.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the second best average rate of return?
Yeah, and that return is 1.92%.
I was going to say 1.98, but thank you for giving the answer.
Oh, what month?
Come on, guys.
Oh, okay.
I said March.
I didn't even guess it right. Obviously, I'm not listening to the details. So,
how about last April?
No,
you're talking any month during any year. The average,
okay.
I would say maybe.
No,
hang on, okay. Don't give it to us. How about November?
You're right.
Ah. Awesome.
The month of November, an average gain of 1.92% has been the number two best performing month over the last three decades. And all that information is from BTN Research. So the Fed is buying $120 billion of bonds each month, $80 billion of Treasury debt, and $40 billion of mortgage-backed securities. The Fed confirmed on March 17th of 2021 that the purchases will continue until substantial further progress has been made toward the committee's maximum employment and price stability goals, and that's the Federal Reserve.
Well, they must see value in buying those bonds.
All right, property taxes levied on office buildings and on private residences make up an estimated 30% of the tax revenue collected by American cities and towns, meaning local governments, and that's from the Urban Institute.
Okay. Interesting.
During the fiscal year of 2020, the 12 months ending 9/30 of 2020, the U.S. government spent $345 billion for interest payments on the national debt, or $945 million a day. 5 years earlier, so that would be the fiscal year 2015, the U.S. government spent $223 billion for interest payments on the national debt, or $611 million a day, and that's from the Treasury Department. So we went from $611 million a day to $945 million a day. That's an increase.
And that's becoming one of our larger items that we spend federal money on. And what do we get for that? Nothing.
Nothing.
Right?
Yeah, and that's why most likely taxes are going to be going up, Ron, because the believability index tends to move left, if you will. We go, you're going to need to do something about your spending. Well, given their unwillingness to do anything about spending, guess what has to ratchet up? Income. So their income and spending gauge, if you will, is getting so far separated from each other that they're going to have to figure out a way to have those join more closely together. And guess what? They're going to need more revenue.
Yeah, yeah.
He's laughing at me paying more tax. Thank you very much. Yeah, there we go. More tax on the way.
Tax
now that's
tax.
Those are real numbers.
Yep.
Almost $1 billion a day. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, it was $945 million a day.
$945 million Jeez. per day. All right. Do we have time here for this last Ed Slott portion? All right. IRA Q&A with Ed Slott. How do I get my 2020 RMD back? How do we get back my 2020 RMD? They say this is the most common question that Slott and Company is getting. So I'm going to actually read the question verbatim. I don't know that we're going to have time to cover the whole thing. But early last year, here's the question. I took my 2020 RMD, or required minimum distribution, from my IRA. But later in the year, the tax law waived RMDs, so I returned the funds. And we had many clients do this as well.
True.
By doing this, I thought this was all taken care of, meaning that I thought I was zeroed out with no tax due. But now it's tax time, and I have two issues I'd like help on. The first one is I received a 1099-R form for the distribution showing it was taxable, even though I returned the unwanted RMD. What do I do? The second issue makes this a bit more complicated. When I took my 2020 RMD, I had tax withheld, usually 20 to 25%. So I only received a net distribution, and that is the amount I returned. Do I now have a tax problem? If so, can it be fixed now in 21? So here's the answer. And I'm not going to read this verbatim, but going to try to hit it. By the way, I'm sorry, Ron, but I keep thinking about the time here. How much time do we have? 4 minutes. Awesome. So we have enough time. Good. So people in your situation probably thought that once you returned the unwanted RMD, it zeroed out the income, as you said in your question, and that removed the bill on that tax bill, rather, on that distribution. Unfortunately, as you found out, the 1099-R tax reporting doesn't work that way. Form 1099-R still shows the RMD as a taxable distribution. It's as though you took it. Since it only shows the distribution and not the return of those funds, a 1099-R is not going to show the return of those funds. It only shows the distribution. So you get the 1099 and you say, well, I thought I returned this money. Or didn't I put it back? As some of you might be saying. It's up to you, the answer, further answer, or your tax preparer to show the returned RMD on your tax return, negating the taxable distribution. You will need to indicate a rollover on your tax return. Because RMDs weren't required last year, there is the only way to show this is a rollover. Previously, you could never roll over an RMD. Well, last year, obviously the rules were all bent. And this is another good example. That RMD can be shown as a rollover if indeed you put it back in. The total distribution from the IRA must be indicated on line 4A of Form 1040 when preparing your federal income tax return. Then enter the word rollover next to line B. So there are ways to do this and take care of it. The key is to make certain that you don't wind up paying tax on an RMD that you actually returned. And guess what? That is a huge issue given the change in the law last year for 2020. And you want to make certain and take care of it in the same way that when you do these QCDs, the 1099-R does not report the QCD as non-taxable income. They'll just give you a gross distribution amount. That's why when we send clients that sheet that shows the full QCD amounts, where there's a big red tag at the top that says you must report this to your tax preparer so that he or she knows to report this not as taxable income, but as a qualified charitable distribution or QCD. All right. Thank you, Ron. All right.
And, anything that we need to mention, classes or any events coming up here before we part ways?
No, just if clients are, we do have some classes coming up, but not ready quite to announce those yet. And our phone number at the office is 231-947-3992. And or our, if you want to listen to these podcasts, record it, 2319proutfinancialdesign.com.
There
we go.
The
phone number, thank you. Proutfinancialdesign.com.
It's all there. Thank you, Dennis Prout.
Appreciate it, Ron.
Heidi Thompson, thank you.
Oh, thank you, Ron.
And we shall return next Thursday live. You can listen to this program in its entirety Saturday morning at 9 a.m. here on WTCM Traverse City.